The theme for the evening talk is seeing into, listening, and being. In connection with teachings and practices, we notice there are features of it, and sometimes we place more emphasis in one particular area, and that seems to work for a period of time very well for us. So there is, of course, and it's important, that there is a lot of encouragement into seeing into things, into looking into things, into being very clear as much as possible about what is going on with ourselves. And in the very course of the process of that, we experience what's called the hindrances or the difficulties which are arising. And in the arising of these particular difficulties, naturally enough, there comes about an immediate wish for them to fade, to dissolve, and to disappear out of the consciousness. That may show itself when there's a lot of greed and desire going on in the mind, and we feel to be in the grip of it. We get caught up in the anger or negativity or agitation. We feel bored and indifferent. We feel restless or anxious or fearful or doubt. So at any time, any moment, these forms of experience, the unsatisfactory ones of human life, can in the experience arise there, and we are encouraged, naturally enough, to really, really take a real clear look at them. We don't have to try to analyze them. We don't have to try to go back into the past to find causal influences from teenage or childhood or whatever. The direct encouragement is, here is the immediacy of what is going on. Can we attend very directly to it? If some understanding and insight comes about the past, which is influencing, that's fine and well and good, but it isn't a necessity. The necessity is seeing what's going on, which is unwelcome, unwanted, unsatisfying, unfulfilling, and one is relieved for it to disappear. So the Buddha spoke, the analogy which he used, he said, it's like a person who has been shot by an arrow, and somebody in the forest has fired the arrow and one has been hit. When one's got the arrow inside, one doesn't start wondering, wonder where that wood came from, and what did the person who fired it have for breakfast, or why do they do this, or whatever it might be. The primary interest is getting the arrow out of the arm or the leg or whatever. So attending to hindrances, that means the greed and the aggression and the boredom and the agitation, the fears and the doubts, is certainly a core aspect of the practice. And quite often, of course, we judge our day, what kind of day we have had, by the presence or the absence of these particular difficulties. So if we've had a good day today, what we're really saying is we didn't have many of these coming up. And if we had a bad day, then what we are saying is that they were all coming up and trying to get one. So our relationship our judgment which form tend to be formed by what is arising, what is going on for us. In that, as I said, there's a lot of encouragement to look directly there, to look the tiger in the eyes, so to speak, and see the fact of experience. But it's not enough, as has been pointed out earlier, just to see the facts of the experience, but also is to see what is called, and has been referred to, I think, by Stephen, the characteristics of it. And therefore, to be very, very clear that one of the characteristics of all experience is that it's formed, meaning it arises and it passes. And though plenty of you, probably all of you, have heard this so often, this change, this arising, things arise and they arise for one reason, to pass, they come to go, they appear to disappear, they form to dissolve. Somehow the memory seems terribly short in the thick of it, and one stops believing in it. One actually, the mind begins to form the view, this is never going to go away, I'm never going to get over this, it's never going to stop. And one has finally found that one believes that apart from truth, there's one other thing which is eternal, and that's one's own unsatisfactory mind state. So the perception of the arising and the perception of the staying and the passing needs itself to be cultivated and developed, so that it begins to come in very strongly when it's needed. If we can be aware of breath coming and passing, aware of lunch coming and passing, aware of the step-by-step activity coming and passing, aware of a communication coming and passing, and being quite clear about this world of forming and dissolving, forming and dissolving, there's an understanding which begins to come in the being. That understanding becomes an extraordinarily good friend when it's necessary for us. Because the formations of which appear and pass in life, we don't have that much control over. And yet we think we do. And if you and I look at any issue in our life which is problematic, it will be around either continuity or discontinuity. If anybody can think of a problem in life which isn't related to continuity or discontinuity, you're the first. Think about anything. This is continuing. It stopped. This is keeps stopping. Why doesn't it start? This is always going on. This is never going on. So we live in this world which continuity and discontinuity matters a tremendous amount to our inner life. We become philosophers about it, but not really attending to really working with these notions. And if you think of the most unhappiness that you might have had in your life, the probability is something around continuity or discontinuity. So the teachings wisely encourage us and remind us again and again, don't live with the ideas of the continuity. So sometimes there is a seeing in too. We see what's going on, difficulties, we see the unsatisfactoriness, and this isn't so easy to see, of course, that which we can see, that which you and I can observe, which we can give attention to, is not ourself. And again, this gets forgotten again. And yet it's one of the most difficult areas in teachings to understand. And it needs to bring awareness to it and say, this, whatever it is arising, is not me, not myself, not who I am. Even though the self keeps leaping into it. I am unhappy, I am confused, I am fearful, I am agitated, I am negative. Sometimes there's just enough awareness present which sees this is going on in the mind. Similarly, the teachings as we were having in the dialogue today with the physical life. Instead of keep seeing this is my body, teachings keep saying there is body. Teachings keep saying instead of my mind, there is this state of mind which is arising. And initially it's hard to see what the difference actually is. It's hard to get a feeling and a sense for. Therefore we are encouraged, please, please, on bended knees, please, learn to see body as body. Learn to see and practice to see states of mind as states of mind. Just so that to see if we can find a little bit more space. When the self absolutely believes, entirely with what it's experiencing, the parallel that comes to my mind is when I have my hand in front of my face and I'm trying to look at what's going on in the palm of my hand. It's extraordinarily difficult. And the self does that. It seems to get so close to it, it becomes it. And one is actually trying to look at something with at the palm of the hand. Put a little bit of space. There is the palm of the hand. There is the body. There is the state of mind. Which is not a denial, not a withdrawal, not a rejection. One is extraordinarily connected. But there's just that little bit of space to see body, as the Buddha instructed, to see states of mind as states of mind. Sometimes in the intensity of what is arising, in the inquiring into, we do get overwhelmed. Pain is too much in the body, and we feel trapped and struggling with the pain. Sometimes there's huge waves of emotion which are arising. We don't feel any space at that time. We just feel drowning in emotions or whatever it might be. However, the event called intense pain, called the arising of emotions, called thinking, whatever, will drop and fade. And it will be more refined, and there will be naturally the opportunity to come back to the sense and the experience of just looking at. And that space gives us, in fact, a chance to actually speak about. If we were totally what we observed, there'd be no space to refer to it. But the very fact we can say, oh, this is going on in the body. This is going on in the states of mind. This is going on in the emotional life. This is going on in all the thinking that's going on. We actually can talk quite well about our experiences. We can describe them fairly well. We can put quite some accurate opinions or conclusions about it. It's all indicating to us that as human beings we have this wonderful capacity to stand back from our experience, look at it and report about it. And this ability to stand back and look at it and report about it does indicate that there is some space between the awareness and what comes to the awareness. If there was absolutely no space, I couldn't possibly refer to it. I couldn't refer to feelings, because I would be feelings. I couldn't get out to look at them. I couldn't refer to thoughts. I couldn't refer to states of mind or states of body. So human beings have this, and we don't use it very well, it's rather sad, but nevertheless, we have this potential with us to actually attend to all that goes on here, and to see it clearly, and not only to see it clearly, not feel and believe it's who I am. Life is going on, and our awareness to that. Sometimes, as was pointed out in one of the small groups today, or indirectly pointed out, some people say, "Oh, Christopher, I've been doing these insight meditation retreats." I don't use the word very much. You may have noticed vipassana. It always seems to me such a long word anyway. That I have heard 50 different pronunciations of this same word, vipassana and vipassani and all of that. I put a proposal, which the teachers rejected. I said, "Look, our Zen brothers and sisters, I mean, what good karma, Zen." Z-E-N, it's very hard to make a mistake. Yeah. So I said, "Look, we're supposed to be innovative, creative, exploring the Dharma for the practical world. Why not call it VIP meditation?" We'll drop the as and ar, because people sometimes think one is being rude. And then we can say this meditation is for VIPs. Only for very important people. VIP meditation. Even your new Prime Minister might even come if you... because I'm sure he now considers himself a very important person, and this is a very... this is VIP meditation. Anyway, my brilliant insight got rejected. So sometimes people who have been engaged in the meditation process for a long time in VIP meditation, or dare I say, there, and say, "Christopher, yes, I've got plenty of experience of looking at the hindrances. I can see through my willingness to look at them instead of control them, escape from them, believe in them, justify them, or suppress them, and all the other unsatisfactory ways. I can look at them, but I still experience in my relationship them, I still experiencing them arise, generally speaking, maybe a little bit less. I can feel a little bit more space in my life, and I am hopefully grateful that the meditations has helped me understand these kind of unsatisfactory arisings in my life. But is that all? I can just see the unsatisfactoriness. I can just see that I can understand it's not really me or myself, because I can look at it as an object of my meditation, as an object of interest, like I can look at anything else in this world as an object of interest. Yet there's still this arising going on. Sometimes we forget other features which are exploring there, and sometimes in that, and I referred a little bit to this last night, that we get used to method and technique, and of course it has great value, but in some forms of our experience on this retreat and elsewhere, method and technique doesn't seem appropriate for our experience. not like going into the body or focusing on aspects of the breath or whatever other techniques. Sometimes some of you have reported that you've been engaged while the meditations have been going on, whether some of you a week or a couple of days, some quite important reflections taking place as well. Sometimes arising quite spontaneously, sometimes making some quiet time for it. And the reflections can help to reveal to us and make clear to us some rather important areas of our life. And we get the sense, I'm not just thinking about this, but something is arising, maybe to do with what was, or to do with today, or next week, or whatever, and we sense there is some necessity to reflect on this. And hopefully, the reflection is a further contribution to helping to understand. Sometimes in the reflection we go to more towards the feeling life. And some of you have reported, at least two or three meetings today on this, sometimes the quality or the level of the feeling life really begins to stand out more closely for us. So, for one person, it may be a feeling of sadness. The sadness which is arising doesn't necessarily have any connection with any particular issue. One can't really say what one feels sad about. But sometimes the mental structures, the concepts, the world of thought fades out of the view. One, as it were, drops to another level. One is in touch with the feeling life, and that feeling life may begin to show something. So for one person it may show a sadness, and obviously many things in this world we can, you know, feel quite sad about. Another person's feeling, what may be showing in the feeling, that there is some contraction in the feeling. There's some sense in the feeling life that there's a limitation there. That there's warm feelings or loving feelings or caring feelings or generous feelings. But in other areas, the heart life feels restricted. It feels dry or cold or cut off or undeveloped or not expansive enough. So sometimes when the mental life isn't so strong, meaning thinking, ideas, remembering, planning, then the feeling life begins to be present, and then in the feeling life we begin to experience, for some people, not for everybody, certain kinds of feelings. When the feeling life is like that, quite often the idea of method and technique, how do I deal with my sadness? How do I make my heart more open? How do I stay steady with these kind of feelings which I can't explain or whatever? And we sometimes, as I say, looking for method and technique. There isn't one. Thus, period. There isn't one. Anything that you and I try to do brings in an act of will, and it tends to have more disturbance in the feeling, in the emotion. We try to make it better, easier, more comfortable, more acceptable, or whatever. And it easily, not always, but easily puts pressure into that sensitive area of our being called our deep feelings. So our mental life is rather limited. The heart life matters. And so sometimes we accept and need to acknowledge in this feeling which I'm feeling right now, or what is being felt right now, all that one can be is with it. To let, in this case, say the feeling of sadness, or the feeling of limitation, the feeling which is unclear or uncertain, let that feeling be such to see where it comes to rest. Where, this is very, very important, I'm using the Buddha's words here, where it comes to rest. If we've got enough practice of some space around our thoughts, some space around our practice, some space around our body, there's a chance and the opportunity for some space around the feeling life. If we don't fight the sadness, if we don't fight the uncomfortable feeling, if we don't fight the hurt, if we don't fight the painful experience from the past, if we don't fight ourselves to try to make it better, the acknowledgement of the very bare feeling itself will itself, without the pressure from the will, without the pressure of the desire force to make it better, it in its own way will heal itself. It's our humility in ourselves. I can't do anything about this. I can't make this sadness something else. I can't do that. And in being with, in the fullness of it, that sadness, if it's sadness, or that unpleasant feeling which is can be quite deep and affect our thoughts, our speech, our attitudes to life, will change itself from that into a depth of inner peace. Sometimes in our sadness, sometimes in that feeling deep down inside which goes on with us, the anxiety which becomes quiet or whatever form it is, the fear which is just becomes a bare sensation in the abdomen, the deeper part of the body or whatever. That sometimes, though everything is telling us, I wish I didn't have this, what we often forget is therein is the place of extraordinary conversion, transformation of all of that into peace, and out of that peace will come joy. That the joy and the sadness are not so far from each other. And usually the moving turning point of all of this is a quality of peace there. The key is no method, no technique, and no interference. The process of life will do itself. Because the true nature of all things is peace. True nature of everything is peace. Just take a look. Everything is actually in peace. If you really, really look into the depth of things, all things are at peace. So sometimes, as I say, we use the method and practices of inquiry, of looking into, of investigation. We come to a deeper level. If we come to a deeper level with a bit more space, the heart will naturally expand. I don't have to make it an act of will. It will begin naturally to open itself out. Because the struggle is over. And in the deeper level of being, it is not easy. That sometimes means that in non-struggling, there is confusion, as one person said. In this practice, in going deeper, confusion is a virtue, not a vice. And the reason it is, in confusion, it usually tells us one thing is the past way of doing things isn't working very well. That's usually one of the indicators about confusion. The confusion is also telling us, I don't know what to do next. And therefore I'm in a confusion. Can we live with this confusion? Can we be confused? Can we stay with this confusion? And see, in the confusion, and some of you have probably had a wonderfully confused day, can we, in the confusion, just see what happens, without doing anything, to the confusion when we allow it to settle down? Not try to organize it, not try to force ourselves back into method and technique and all of that, but to allow it to settle down and see where it settles, what way it settles. But sometimes, as I say, there's an impatience with confusion, and we get impatient with ourselves. And of course, teachers, we're prime targets for people to come impatient, because they'll come, people will come to me and say, please, I feel incredibly confused. And can you give me a method and technique so I can get rid of this confusion rather quickly? I think it's called a lobotomy. And we want something. But in a way, past not working, future unknown, we're in the middle of it. Let's see where it ends. Let's see where is its resting place. Sometimes, in the listening, there is often a perception of you that takes place, especially in the insight meditation world, that we teach first, and then after the teaching comes the practice. The practice confirms the teaching, and therefore teaching is a cause and an encouragement. Then one goes and practices, and then from the practice comes the experience, and from the experience comes the insight. It seems to me, apart from anything else, rather hard work, always looking at it like that. So sometimes you may say, maybe listening, say, to the talk this evening, you think, oh, because you're saying, okay, look into confusion, look into sadness, look into the deep into feelings, okay, I'm tired tonight, I'll start at punctually at 5:30 tomorrow morning, etc. One of the things which is worthwhile and invaluable to remember is, if one goes to the texts, in this case Buddhist tradition, Hindu Vedanta tradition, etc., as well as the many wonderful texts available in this part of the world, one of the things which one can't help but notice again and again, how much realization, insight, understanding, enlightenment, liberation, being with God, however language, came as a result of the communication. Came as a result of the dialogue. Came as a result of what was said. Now, don't remember all these marvelous religious books and the saints and the sages and the prophets putting out and saying, and then they said afterwards, well, this is the method and technique. And then, no, something happens and still happens wonderfully in the actual communication itself. There is something about the Dharma teachings, and this is where I'm going from seeing into now, into listening, where in the act of listening itself, without anything following on from it, that the listening itself can make things beautifully clear. Beautifully clear. And it hasn't required any kind of journey, inward journey, in the way that we would speak about in insight meditation or whatever. So to some degree, the teachings are saying, I don't want to sound too crude here, look, if you don't get it while listening, well, too bad, because now you've got to sit and meditate. Really, that's more or less, I think, what happens. So in the actual listening, sometimes in the contact with the listening, awareness comes, realizations come, insight comes, heart opening comes, clarity comes, sense of freedom of comes, and it's right present, tangible, and it doesn't fade away. So there is some kind of dynamic in the act of listening which is very powerful for people, which can really significantly transform our life and doesn't require the follow-up in lots of practices. And it would be foolish if you and I said, oh, well, it's due to the, what's that popular word, charisma. I never understood what this word, I thought it had something to do with Christmas. So this charisma of the teacher or whatever it might be. And it's not something to do with the words per se, since most people in Dharma teachings are not hearing anything new. Even on their first retreat, many people will come in a one-to-one, and she or he will say, well, you know, I know this already, but I need a reminder. I haven't heard anything new, but I'm hearing it differently. So it's not like the language is some special language which is really significant, because what we talk about is familiar to most of us, maybe all of us. It's not something with the some special teacher's vibes or funny business like that. Yet something in the total event or process which goes on resonates strongly. We can't quite understand why, and one can't say, well, it's all because of me, nor can one say it's all because of him, the teacher, or her, the teacher, but something in the dynamic. There is a meeting point. The meeting point is a catalyst, and the catalyst is enlightening. And that's still in that form of listening. So one, as we know, tends to give great support to the other. What we find is, as we meditate in the silence, with the practices, with the wonderful methods and techniques that are available, with the non-methods and non-techniques which are available, it genuinely heightens the appreciation in the listening. And the listening heightens the appreciation in the meditation, for the meditation. And all of that is providing a catalyst for a transformed way of being in this world. So sometimes it's seeing into, like the practices we talk about. Sometimes it's the listening, and the listening is the revelation itself. And the other feature of the talk, of course, is the sense of being. And this also matters a great deal, frequently referred to. And if we look at our life, in our everyday life, we have to actually ask ourselves, as an individual and as a species, whether we have the nerve to even call ourselves human beings. Because sometimes when we take a look at our life, human beings seem to be, you know, always talking about the increase in population. I got my doubts. I think the population of human beings is actually going down, if anything. And what we've got is human running afters and human accumulating and human racing around after this, that and the other, and human doing, human being. You know, I commented once in a talk in the United States that we're supposed to be Homo sapiens, and we've ended up as Homo shopians. And this is all a signal and a sign of real development and what an advanced society we are all living in. And anybody who's ever been to the shopping mall, I think, or mall as they somewhat call it, when I go and I have a look around, all I can see is the primitive hunter-gatherer mentality and think, well, nothing has changed. So sometimes we look at our life and we see this move towards moving, doing. We get a sense, we know that we're moving away from something we can't quite explain, and in a way what we're saying is, I'm moving away from human being. I'm moving away in life from this sense of being. And the further we move away from that, the more disconnected, the more alienated, the more unhappy, the more confused. I was just reading the introduction to a book, and this is the privilege of teachers, you can't read, I can read. And in my room today, it's actually a very good book. It's called In Your Right Mind. And it's a psychiatrist who's also the medical correspondent for the Times newspaper in Britain. And what he's attempted to do is to give a layperson's guide to understanding the language of psychology, psychiatry. You know, what's the difference between clinical depression and depression? But what's schizophrenia? What's a bipolar condition, etc., etc., and some of the conditions that give rise to all this. And important book. He said in the first two or three pages of this book, and these things are just, I think, one of the kind of sadnesses of our society, and I don't know how it is here in Israel, but I'm just speaking for the United Kingdom for a moment. He said that one in 20 people are depressed. One in 20 people in Britain are depressed. And he said the probability is, in Britain, that every day one will probably meet someone who is depressed. That has to say something about conditions in which people are living, about pressures and social issues which are going on, about the lack of resources which are available, or just one or two kinds of resources. And all of that, in a way, I think needs, and when for us to look at ourselves, that maybe we're getting so far away and so lost in all the pressures that it's too much for the heart, mind to bear, and one of the results of many, that one feels depressed. The energy can't keep reaching out. I mean, I'm oversimplifying a great deal. So the vigilance for us is to keep reconnecting with the sense of being. And so sometimes, and keeping it here specifically now for a moment, sometimes, and appropriately, we don't want to inquire into yet another hindrance that has arisen. Sometimes we don't want to hear any more teachings or whatever it may be. And sometimes, because both of those, inquiring into, seeing into, or listening to, are a certain kind of movement towards, unless we're extremely steady and receptive. And sometimes we know we just want the sense of being. And some of you, in your walking and in your manner of sitting in here and your presence and your flow, and do generate a lovely and wonderful sense of being there. And I find, I remember from my days in the monastery, that with the monks and the nuns and the novices, there are a number of people that one would see in the monastery, and just their way of being, no, they never said anything, was just inspiring. Just the way the person would walk into the Dharma hall in the evening for the talk, the way the monk or the nun would get up and leave, the way they would just go to the dining hall or whatever, there's something about their being which was inspiring and warm and quite lovely to watch and to witness. And people have that, and people on retreats, and when we look around here, that sense of being is a beautiful statement about life, about human being. And I think it's important in all of this, in the time and the days that you and I have here together, that there is the inquiring into. It's a great freedom of life. There is the willingness to let the method and technique fade and to feel the deep, even if it's difficult, to feel the deep of life, and to feel the deep and trust the feeling of the deep is okay. There is the importance for listening, and the tremendous emphasis on listening, and how it's been a tremendous resource for really giving us great insights and immediate realizations. And there is a tremendous place for the sense of being. And if you and I really treat respectfully all those three in our life, nothing can stop enlightenment then. Nothing can stop unstoppable friendship towards all of life. Nothing can stop a wonderful sense of freedom which death cannot take away.